Blog Talk Radio.
And welcome to American Conservative Party Radio. My name is Tracy.
And I'm Bill.
And we're here for another week of conservative point of view talk radio. Good evening,
yeah.
Bill.
Good evening there, Tracy. Hey, who does that bumper music, Bill?
That is by Tubular Bells by Tangerine Dream. Is it Tangerine Dream? No. Oh, see, you should have asked me that before. I could have gotten it.
Well, yeah, it's a little tough to do that when we come on so late, though.
My brain is fried.
Yeah, I'm sorry. When you get a chance to look at it, let me know. I think I'd like to get that music.
It's not available by that album. You have to get it. It has to be on some other compilation album.
Uh-huh.
And if you look for a piece that's called Pure Moods, it's on that CD.
Okay.
So that's where I have it. Because
okay.
Trying to actually find the CD that it came on, I think it went out of print like 20 years ago.
Yeah, but it might be on BitTorrent or something like that.
That's true.
Yeah.
And I'm looking around to see all my CDs here, if I have it right offhand, and I don't think I do. While we're talking, I will look.
I'll tell you what. While you're looking, tell me about, I heard a rumor over the internet, specifically Twitter, that you actually got to go out and play some golf.
Not a rumor. I'm here to quell all the rumors.
All right.
And yes, I did get out on Saturday. I think I went out on Saturday. It was Saturday or Sunday. Saturday or Sunday. It was over the weekend.
Cool.
I went out and played 9 holes.
Yeah.
Parred the first 2 holes. Started thinking delusions of grandeur.
Look out, really Tiger, here I come.
You know, but I also knew that the simple fact of the matter is that I would get tired as the round went on and it would things would start to fall apart. However, I did par 1, 2, 5, and 9.
Mm.
So that was actually pretty good.
Yeah.
This hole was a par 5, which I parred, and the 9th hole was a par 3, which I parred.
All right.
So the I actually played pretty well, considering that it was the first time I was actually out and swinging the club at a ball.
Yeah, right.
So,
yeah.
Since
sometime last summer.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
You know, it was relatively... I was playing behind a foursome. I was playing by myself. I did take a cart because first one out, and I wasn't interested in walking. The course is a full-size, pretty much a full-size 9 hole. It's not any executive course or anything like that.
Yeah.
And there's a fair amount of hills on it, so I didn't want to kill myself on the first time out.
Exactly.
But I did enjoy myself. I had a good time.
Good.
I was pretty happy with my round. I only took one mulligan.
Hey.
So that people understand, not that you really care, I understand that. I don't card my first round.
Uh-huh.
I don't tally my first 5 rounds. After that, I tally and score the rounds. And I'm allowed a mulligan aside for the first round and a mulligan around for the first 5 rounds.
Cool.
That's my own personal rule.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and usually, of course, that's at the beginning of the season. So, you know, there's those things. It's meant to take into consideration that the courses are usually not in the best of shape in April and May.
Sure.
And neither am I.
Yeah, exactly.
So, that's, you know, just the way it is.
Yeah.
But it was enjoyable. I almost thought maybe I was going to go out today, and then I woke up this morning, and clients had dropped a stack of cases onto my lap this morning.
Oh, work.
Yeah. Work. The only reason I got over the weekend was because I was actually current. I had actually completed all the cases that I had.
Cool.
I had no work to do, so I could actually go out and do some more. Do some stuff.
Excellent.
However, did I, you know, you and I talk.
Yep.
So everybody knows, after the show's over, Bill and I talk, because now we don't talk before the show.
Right.
We actually talk a little bit after the show.
Yeah.
And I think I think we talked about this after the show. I didn't talk about on the show. We're not going to San Diego.
Yes, that's true. Yep. And I am I'm not happy about that, but I understand what's happening.
So we're staying here for one more year. We'll be able to do a little bit better planning. And I think I was talking about it online with people. We have done what Barack Obama cannot do. We have hired three people.
Yes, you have.
We've hired a new attorney to work with Victoria. We've hired a new assistant to work with me. And we've hired a person to do marketing for us, some specific marketing that I normally do but simply just don't have the time to do.
Mm-hmm.
And that person will be working on a part-time basis. Our goal is to get real busy in the business for the next year.
I don't think that's going to be a problem.
Nope. And we instituted Plan B last Monday. Plan B is doing all this hiring and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
The marketing person actually started kicking into gear by Tuesday. And our goal is to add 7 to 10 new clients per month. And as of today, the seventh day of Plan B, we have added 6 new clients.
Excellent.
With a full day of new people coming in tomorrow, I expect to actually hit our target for July, starting on what was basically the 20th of the month.
Yes.
So I think things are going to. The phone has been ringing pretty much. The marketing is working as planned. They're not doing anything that we haven't done over the years.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that I haven't been doing much of it because I've been too busy. So this is a way.
Exactly.
We're going to do things. What do you mean I'm talking about the weather? I'm not talking about the weather. I'm talking about golf.
Really?
Somebody's...
I can talk about weather, though. We've had some record temperatures. Obviously, Al Gore has not been around. We were 109 yesterday. We got up to 107 today, but we had this lovely, lovely little thunderstorm that came over, complete with hail and rain and all that kind of good stuff.
Well, see,
it remains
109. I could go out to the golf course for 109.
Yeah, well. yeah, it's a little warm. I was in Redding the other day, and it was 112.
Okay.
So, yeah.
No, but it's a dry heat.
Yeah, right, exactly. But you know what? It's still hot.
It's hot. All right. So we'll move on from the golf. We got that done.
Yep.
We got the business thing that we're going to be hanging around. We've employed people. This is a wonderful thing. Business is going great. Unfortunately, for the rest of the country, business is going great because, of course, our business is bankruptcy.
That's right. Do well.
To update, my nephew has been sent home.
Excellent.
He is home. When the surgeon decided that they could change his dressing outside of surgery, that's when they could send him home. Now, the other side of it was if they could change the dressing outside of surgery and he didn't pass out from the pain.
Ah, okay. Yep.
So he just screams a lot when they're changing the dressing.
Yeah, exactly.
He doesn't pass out.
Yeah, okay.
My sister's having a lot of fun with that.
Yeah,
so,
well, screaming's okay. Passing out is, a little bit not.
But he is at home, so things are progressing there. The amputation is sealed clean and looks to be good. So that's good. Just to let everybody know where that is.
Yes, it is.
But I want to kind of lead this into the healthcare discussion that's been going on.
Oh, boy.
Because, I mean, there are several things that are part of Kevin's situation that apply to what's going on. Now, he was injured on June 12th? I think it's June 12th.
Yeah, I think so, close to that.
Yeah, June 12th, he was injured. They amputated the leg on the Wednesday after, and he's out of the hospital already.
Yes.
But they said if he couldn't get out of the hospital by the end of this week, they were going to send him to a rehabilitative care facility in another state.
Oh, my gosh.
Which was kind of ridiculous because he's a minor.
Really?
Hello? So when they said, you know, no, you can't do that, he's a minor, they went, oh. So,
yeah.
But, you know, who's paying for my nephew's medical coverage? Because he caused the accident. It wasn't like, you know, an auto accident that he can sue somebody for it. I mean, he did it.
Right.
He's
right.
The one that did it. He's responsible for it. He's a minor, which puts my sister and her husband on the hook. Now, their auto insurance is actually going to cover part of that.
Mm-hmm.
But they're balking because he wasn't licensed to be on the motorcycle.
Oops.
So there's an issue about that.
Mm-hmm.
In the meantime, there's an estimate. My sister has not seen a bill from them yet. They have not issued any bills at this point.
Really?
But given that he's had 17 surgeries, including 4 major surgeries, any surgery is major, but I mean surgeries that lasted more than 5 hours. You know, his bill is probably somewhere north of $150,000, $200,000.
Oh, I think more than that.
Yeah, probably depends on the stuff. But I was trying to think. He did not go into intensive care except for the first 12 hours. They got him in and realized that he was pretty stable in other regards, got him into surgery, and then when he came out of surgery, he was in intensive care till he was out of the anesthesia, and then he was out of intensive care. So, you know, the question is who's going to be paying for this? Now, my sister has health insurance, and... Mm-hmm. You know, from her employer, and that insurance is probably going to kick in a good portion of whatever doesn't get paid there. However, the hospital has advised them that they qualify for community care, so the bill is going to be modified based on that also.
Mm-hmm.
Now, Victoria is benefiting from a little bit of community care also, which is the hospital's way of reducing bills for people that are on their own.
Got it. Okay.
Now, Kevin is in a religious foundation hospital, as many, many hospitals in this country are.
Yes, they are.
Yeah. Victoria has been not cared for a religious organization at all. She has been in the religious foundation hospital once or twice in the care period.
Mm-hmm.
It is just one of the HMOs here that she's being cared for, but they have this community program. And, you know, the people that are arguing against those of us that are arguing against health care reform are saying, don't you want people to have care?
Exactly.
Now, my nephew got care. In an emergency situation, he went to the hospital. They did stuff long before they, you know, before bills were being and insurances were being straightened out and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Victoria's had significant amount of care, despite the fact that, you know, we neither have the general capacity nor the insurance to cover it. I'm not suggesting that everybody should be, you know, get rid of their insurance and just take care of, you know, just dump it on the health. The point is, medical care is out there. Whether you have insurance or not, whether you can pay for it or not, health care is out there.
You know, I was reminded this past week that there is, in fact, a difference between being insured and having access to health care.
Correct. We all have access to health care.
Yep.
We do. I mean, unless you're Kaczynski in the Montana, cabins.
Yeah, right. Yeah.
You got care in this country. It's there.
Mm-hmm.
You know, nobody that walks into a hospital right now is going to be turned away. They're going to look at, do you got insurance? No. Can you afford to pay this? No. Get out of here. It's not going to happen.
Can't happen.
You're going to walk in, they're going to go, we're going to take care of you. And then we'll figure out how to get it paid later.
Yep.
Somebody said, well, if somebody walks in with swine flu, do you think they should be cared for? I said, yes, they should be cared for. Beyond the concept that they need care because they're suffering from the flu, they also have a contagious, disease that is a public health issue.
Yes.
And then he said, well, if they have cancer, you obviously mean that they should be just sent away. And I'm like, why would you think that?
Yeah, exactly.
Somebody walks in with cancer, they're going to get treated. Now, I will admit right here and now that if you don't have insurance and no capacity to pay and you have cancer, you are not going to get the platinum gold treatment.
Yes, that's true.
You are going to get, good,
standard,
solid treatment.
Yep.
It'll be, not the $50,000 a shot treatment. They're not going to do it.
Nope.
But if you had insurance, the insurance company's probably not going to let you do it either.
Exactly.
And certainly the government's not going to let you do it.
Nope.
So,
which is probably one of the best arguments. That's probably one of the best arguments for making sure that whatever health plan is enacted, elected representatives need to be compelled to participate in that.
It is people are arguing two sides of the same coin here.
Mm-hmm.
And they're doing it from different points of view. We're saying that health care is available.
Yes.
They're saying insurance is too expensive.
Oh, gosh.
Okay. Well, okay. But Obama's care is not going to reduce the cost of insurance.
No, it isn't.
And it's not going to improve access to health care.
No, it isn't.
So,
I mean, how can you improve on 100%?
I hope that this is going to go down in flames.
Oh, I'm keeping my fingers crossed.
I think there's a chance that it's not going to pass at this point. The problem we have, and this is the problem that we have with Congress all the time, is they want to be seen to do something.
Something.
Okay, and I said this in the past week. Congress has proven that it is no longer capable of writing any legislation that will function as planned at a cost that has been predicted. Bankruptcy reform not operating as expected. Consumer protection, was it CPISA from last year? Not functioning as expected. TARP, not functioning as expected. Stimulus, not functioning as expected.
Well, expected by us.
It's not even functioning as expected by them. I mean, it might be functioning as expected by Goldman Sachs, but that's about the only one that's actually getting what they wanted out of it.
Interesting theory, and it's only a theory. Historically, as we get further into this, it may become more apparent, but when you look at the stimulus package, it was designed to take effect and to be most evident in 2010. 2010 is significant only because the entire House of Representatives is up for election and one-third of the Senate.
And by that time, one of two things will happen.
Hmm.
No, I don't think one of two things. I am convinced that the economy will not be recovering because of the stimulus package, even if every penny of it that they had planned to spend gets spent in 2010.
Oh, I agree with that. I mean, it was designed to be a political payoff, not an economic stimulus.
So, you know, other than, you know, somebody being able to say, oh, I voted for it, you know,
mm-hmm.
and state government now has 30,000 more employees than they did 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry that we've lost 800,000 jobs in the state, but
yeah, right.
we have a lot bigger, you know, we have all these other people, you know, working
yeah.
for the state.
Working, that's right.
I think most people are going to say, that's not stimulus in my mind.
Nope.
Of course, there are certain people, like the 30,000 people that are now government employees working for government unions, that will be perfectly happy with that point.
And that are also union members.
All right. So, the question I had asked me today was, what difference, and that I want you to understand that I didn't dismiss this out of hand.
Okay.
What difference is it between providing health care and providing fire protection? Okay, now
hmm.
I want everybody to think about this for a second. Okay? If we take our tax dollars and we hire firefighters and we station them all around and they come when it's needed, we consider that to be a good thing.
Yes.
If we take tax dollars and we hire doctors and station them all around and you can use them when you need it, what's the difference?
One is local.
Both are local.
No.
Now, I know you're making the argument that one is being paid by the federal government, the other one's being paid by the local government.
Right.
And I would suggest to you that that is certainly one point.
Mm-hmm.
But they're going to go past that point and say it's still government providing a benefit. Because frankly, you know, there's things that I will accept a state government doing that I absolutely will rail against a federal government doing.
Well, but is the argument that if you are prepared to accept any level of government to provide a good or a service, that you must then therefore be amenable and in favor of any other level of government to provide a good or a service in the same fashion?
I would say no. That would seem to be the argument.
Yeah.
Now, one of the things, now my general response to that has always been, you cannot demand from me the fruits of my labor and productivity for the benefit of another.
As a general rule, yeah.
Okay, but of course, government does take from me in the form of taxes to provide for those fire departments.
Yep.
Now, it's not just for my benefit, but it's for everybody else's benefit. And of course, when somebody mentioned that, you know, why should I pay for a fire department if it's somebody else's house that's burning down? And I said, well, somebody else's house that's burning down is next door to mine.
Yeah, right. Or yours.
there's a point to that. However, I want to get people to think about the point of view of the other side. Now, I usually state quite clearly that I consider most of the time the other side to be morons.
Yep.
They use altogether different words for us.
Yes, they do.
But generally speaking, the result is the same. They
yes.
think we're stupid, and we think they're stupid, and
yep.
nobody can see the other side. I've tried really hard today to see the other side. On the off chance that there might be a point there.
Okay.
I didn't find one, realistically.
Okay.
In my mind. Simply because my issue is at the federal level, no. Absolutely, positively not. Federal government does not belong providing individual health care or health care insurance, which, of course, begs the question, what about Medicare? Well, I'm opposed to Medicare, too. And then I said, well, what about Social Security? I said, well, I'm opposed to Social Security, too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and they said, is there anything that you will pay for? And I said, well, judiciary, the military.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, then we get all kinds of crap about the military stuff.
Right.
It went off in a different direction. I didn't want to go there.
Yeah, right.
And I don't want to say I want to be going here, there, here, either.
Right. There's no point to doing it.
If government wants to provide health care, do it at the state level.
Mm-hmm.
Here's how the federal government can help. Okay? Eliminate interstate restrictions to insurance companies. National insurance companies right now have to provide 50 different versions of each of their health care programs.
Hmm. I think we need to be careful about what we wish for there.
I also asked, why can I not go to an insurance company, and by the way, I've tried, and say, this is what I want. I want a $5,000 deductible. I want you to cover any time I go into the hospital as an inpatient. I don't want any outpatient coverage at all.
Okay.
That's all I want. Inpatient care, $5,000 deductible.
That sounds like a
high
deductible
policy. I'm sorry?
That sounds like one of those high deductible policies.
It's close, but you in a high deductible policy, you can still have a significant amount of outpatient care. You go to an ER, you're an outpatient.
Ah, okay.
Okay, until you're actually admitted to the hospital, you're an outpatient. You can rack up some pretty serious bills.
Yep.
You know, my nephew was not admitted to the hospital until after he came out of surgery.
Oh, okay.
You know, he was an outpatient until he came out of surgery. So that first surgery was as an outpatient. So that's at least as I understand it based on my conversation with my sister. In any case, that's what I wanted. And I can't get it. Not in this state. It might be available in other states, but it's not available in this state, which is part of the problems. Okay.
Mm-hmm.
The point of me taking us in this direction is I want you to understand that the people that are on the other side desperately want this insurance, and any rational argument is irrelevant.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely irrelevant. There's some people that I talk to online who are very nice people. We disagree completely. They're very nice people who are desperately looking for something, to give them, a break from what they're spending or, some kind of coverage because they can't afford to get any kind of coverage.
Mm.
And anything that we say, any reality that exists, simply doesn't register with them.
Mm.
They're gonna stand for it right up until the time that they're denied coverage because they're too ill or they're too old. It is certainly one of the things that Victoria has decided is a big problem for her with, despite the fact that she voted for Obama, despite the fact that she wants this, but she has a really big problem because at 56 years old, she has significant chronic illness issues that make it difficult on a cost-adjusted basis for her to be given any kind of long-term treatment. They certainly are not going to spend any significant amount of money on her eyes, given the probability is that she is blind forever.
Exactly. Yeah.
And any surgery is not likely to have any real impact upon that.
Mm-hmm.
So any attempts are not going to be made based on Obamacare.
Right.
She's very concerned by that. She's very concerned by that. But that's a case where I've been able to work on her for the last 8 months.
Yeah.
Carefully, quietly, nicely, respectfully. mm-hmm. you know, pay attention to the fact that this is what he says.
So, actually, let me ask you a question, Therese. Any of these people that you're talking to online have handicapped children? Or do you know?
I know the circumstances of two of them, and I believe the answer is no.
Okay.
Both of them are dealing with their own or their spouse's issues.
Got it. Okay. I only bring that up because apparently handicapped children, specifically Down's syndrome children, are discouraged from participating in this healthcare.
Well, let me, you know, it's kind of funny because, you know, between Victoria, I, and my family, you know, we're going to be able to cover a lot of the health area. Billy, my brother, was born with muscular dystrophy.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm.
And most of the treatment that was being made available when he was young, which is we're talking about in the 60s, was not only experimental, it was practically cutting-edge stuff because they simply didn't know.
Right, exactly.
And my father's health insurance, which was very good, didn't always cover all the bills, and there were some significant ones.
Mm-hmm.
Especially on the diagnostic side.
Yes.
And you know who covered most of my parents' bills in that regard?
Probably Schleiner.
Muscular Dystrophy Association.
Ah, MDA. Okay.
Okay. And, you know, they helped in that regard. Because my brother was, a guinea pig on a lot of that stuff.
Sure.
Because it was so early in the discovery stages of muscular dystrophy.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid that you're correct, that anybody that's going to need recurring medical coverage for an extended period of time is going to be attempted to be dissuaded from using it.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that's just the nature of the game. It's not going to be any different because the government's involved in it than insurance companies. Government's going to be just as interested in cutting costs and minimizing expenses as any insurance company.
Oh, even more so.
And
they are not subject to suits for denial of coverage based on the language of whatever the bill and the regulations are. Insurance companies are. You can sue your insurance company if you can catch them up in the fine print of their own contract. You're not going to be able to do that with the government.
Okay, we got a caller.
Oh, great.
Something new I've never seen before. This is great. David from Montreal. David, welcome. Good evening.
Yes, hi. Can you hear me?
I can hear you fine.
Hi. You can hear me fine?
Yes, we can.
Okay, great. Yes, it's because I just got a new headset, so I'm just testing it out. Great, it works. Glad it works. Well, enjoy your show, by the way. My name is David, calling.
Turn off your background speakers.
I'm sorry?
Turn off your background speakers.
Okay. Can you hear now?
Yep.
I hear you fine, but I could hear me too, twice.
Oh, okay. Okay, hold on. What about now?
I think, I don't know.
A little better?
Yep. Go ahead, David. Go ahead. What's up?
Okay, still an echo?
Yeah, there is. Can you turn your speaker down all the way?
Yeah, I won't be able to hear you. I just want to let you know, of course, I do like your show. I will hang up right away, but to ask your opinion, well, what is your opinion on the Republican stance on the F-22 fighter jet program that will be abolished by President Obama?
I'm going to jump in first as a former Air Force person.
All right.
I think it was.
I'm going to go ahead and hang up. Not keep on listening, but I'll go ahead and hang up. But thank you very much.
Thank you, David.
Thank you, David.
Okay. I would say I think that's short-sighted. It's a way of looking at the military, saying We have the best fighters. We have the best air superiority fighters on the planet right now. Great. There's nobody that can beat us in the air anywhere in the world right now. Great. However, F-22s are going to be in place going forward over the next 20 years. And they're not going to be there. I understand the military decided they didn't want them. So by that means, I certainly don't have a gripe with Obama killing them. The military said they didn't want them. And I'm willing to accept that the military doesn't always act in our own best interest. It does act in its own best interest at times when it comes to procurement and such like that. But I'm willing to defer to the military at this point. The military said they didn't want it. Obama killed it. You know, I think keeping it around was probably more of a political issue than a military issue. And by that token, I think it's fine. I think the Republicans are torn for exactly the same reason. They're willing to defer to the military, but there was political considerations. I'm not a big fan of political considerations on military hardware.
I think I have a little bit contrarian view to that.
Okay.
And the situation, as I understand it, is the military wanted originally, and the estimate was, if they had 274 F-22s, they would then be able to phase out the F-15, which is the air superiority. Well, actually, it's configurable both as a ground attack and as an air superiority. So
that's true.
They have settled on 147. Supposedly, they settled on that because they do not perceive any large-scale confrontations. The thing that complicates it is the F-35 is sitting there waiting in the wings. F-35 has a lot of the characteristics of the F-22, i.e. it is stealth. It will super cruise. Configurable. So on first glance, you'd say, okay. On second glance, you say, let's see, we have F-35 on the drawing boards, and I would suspect that at least some have been built so that they can test. We have an F-22 that frankly kicks butt on the F-15, and we're saying that we only need 147, and then you couple that with the recent news that, oh gosh, we've discovered some major structural flaws in our F-15 fleet. That leaves us without a demonstrated air superiority. I get real nervous when that happens. Because, no, wars are not won from the air. They're won on the ground. You have to have boots on the ground. But let me tell you what. If you're a ground pounder, if you're a Marine, you absolutely have to have your Air Force controlling the skies and giving you ground support. Because you aren't going to win it in today's world. You aren't going to win your war without that. So the Air Force can't win it, but they can sure as hell lose it.
And you know, I mean, those are all seriously good points. But I'm willing to concede that the military gets to make that decision.
If they do that without political pressure, yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
I have absolutely no doubt in my mind that this administration said, hey, guys, we're only going to give you this much money. And, by the way, you aren't going to get as many F-22s as you want. Oh, if you're a good general, you're going to salute and say, yes, sir. You may make your arguments in private, but you are not going to go public with any hesitations or qualms about what that decision actually means. You can't. You could resign and do it that way, but that's about the only way.
You know, Gates appears to be less of a political animal than some of the other previous Secretaries of Defense.
Yeah.
I don't agree with all of his positions or his choices. He has a greater access to information than I do.
Yeah,
I'm going
absolutely.
To defer to his judgment, generally speaking. This is one of those places. You know, and, you know, in the future we'll find out whether it's a good idea or not a good idea.
Mm-hmm.
And if we find out that it's not a good idea, we're going to be in a world of hurt, and we're going to have to deal with it.
Yep.
Speaking of Gates.
Yes.
Speaking of Gates.
Yes.
I got into a big argument over the weekend with someone that to whom I have a great deal of respect.
Mm.
And it was clear we were going to be on opposite sides of this position.
Mm-hmm.
And then he got a little bit, not with me, a little bit into name-calling, and I didn't appreciate that, so I decided to end the conversation with him.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not going to say who it was, but I am going to suggest that his position was that Gates had every right to mouth off to the cops, yell, scream, jump up and down, kick. Well, not the kick part. But he pretty much had, you know, Gates had every right to get all kinds of belligerent and talk, and the cops had no right to arrest him.
Oh, my gosh.
And I want to say this is a person who I consider to be an extremely strong conservative. His positions tend to be even a little bit borderline libertarian. Not that I find that to be at all a problem, because I have similar positions. But I found his position to be really bad in the sense that he called me out on the following point. We are, Victoria is an attorney. We represent consumers, not just in bankruptcy, but in a lot of issues, including misdemeanor issues, you know, criminal court issues. And we tell clients all the time, you get pulled over by a cop, you are polite, you respond appropriately, and, you know, if there's an issue, you know, take your ticket, whatever, and bring it to the court.
Yep.
Okay. You are polite to the cop, and you do what he asks, and you go on. Well, that seems to be perfect, just good sense to me. First of all, it's respectful.
Yes.
Okay, he's got a job to do. He feels that you have done something that is in violation of the law. He's going to discuss it with you. You can be polite and respectful for that position. You can disagree with him if you want. You can say, I respectfully disagree, but that's where we are, and take it to the court. No. According to this person, that's a police state issue, and I am, you know, bowing down and kissing the ass of the state.
Wow.
I just find that position to be nuts. You know, beyond everything else, the cop has a gun.
Yeah. First thing that ran across my mind.
Two, he can arrest you.
Yes, he can.
Okay. No matter what happens after that fact, whether he's wrong and he gets disciplined or the charges get dumped out or a judge goes, are you nuts? Doesn't make any difference. At that point, you're going to go a place that you weren't planning on going.
Yep.
You're going to jail, and you're going to have to deal with those issues. Okay. Even if everything gets taken care of, you know, it's certainly not worth it. But he just saw that as kowtowing to a police state. And I'm like, it just doesn't make any sense to me. But he was unmovable from that point of view, and he got pretty belligerent when I'm, you know, continued to hold that position.
Wow.
Done. Conversation over.
That's amazing. I mean,
the cop,
if he had been talking about a cop demanding entrance to your home without a warrant, okay, he's got a point. Can't do that. If
right.
he's talking about you are out on a public street and he pulls you over, not so much.
Let's talk about the specifics of Mr. Gates.
Yes.
You're Professor Gates, Dr. Gates.
Yes.
The cop arrives.
After having been called by a citizen in the neighborhood.
Cop arrives, and Gates' first response was, who are you? And he identifies himself and why he's there. And Gates throws out the race card right then and there. Okay. Obviously, we're going downhill from there.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
big time.
The conversation goes, we get the cop into the house. Gates is still being belligerent. Cop is still holding his own. You know, Gates said, you know, tell me your badge. Apparently, the cop has said, I've done it twice. You know, I'm done doing that. You're not really listening. You're just screaming. You know, I'm leaving. I'm walking out the door. Gates follows him out the door. The cop gets onto the step and turns around and says, I'm warning you. Cool down. You know, we're done. And Gates just continues to go off. Done. Cop's done. You know, now you're making a scene in public. There's people standing around. There's other cops standing around. You haven't backed off. You've been warned. Done. Okay? Now, I used the example of, did I talk about being pulled over just before the 4th of July?
Hmm.
On my way down to my parents' house, 4th of July weekend, transitioning from one expressway to another expressway, I got cut off by a truck. I ended up in the, where the roads start to meet, you get that little asphalt median between the roads. You're not supposed to cross those.
Right.
I ended up in there. I considered for a second going ahead and complete the pass over. Decided no, I wasn't going to do it. Hit the brakes, got in back behind the truck.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sitting there quite animated at the truck.
Yeah, I'll bet you are.
And I look at my rearview mirror and I got flashing lights. Of course, I'm just now pissed. I pull myself over, you know, and I open up the window. My hands are on the steering wheel. The first words out of my mouth, I can't believe it. Did you see what he did? The cop goes, calm down. I'm not giving you a ticket.
Very good.
Okay. First words, I said, but did you see? He goes, I saw what you did. You were moving a little bit too fast for the conditions. I saw you got cut off. You know, I stopped you just to give you a moment to take a breath.
Ah. A little preemptive road rage.
You know, he saw how animated I was.
Yep.
And how busy the traffic was. He mm-hmm. was giving me a moment to calm down.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Now, was that inappropriate?
No.
According to this person that we know, it was.
Well, according to him, yes. According to me, nah. Probably good community policing.
You know,
what would have been better community policing? What would have been better community?
Policing. I think it's appropriate. I thought it was appropriate.
Yes.
I certainly didn't like it. I certainly was upset about it. But I also pulled away from that curb without a ticket or a warning. So,
cool.
In the end, I was kind of happy.
Yep. Of course, what would have been better is if they'd been working in pairs and somebody would have pulled the truck over, too. But you can't have everything.
Yeah. Can't have everything. So,
yep.
For me, it's a situation where, you know, be polite, be respectful. You know, he wasn't, I'm talking about Gates, he wasn't. He got off on a tangent immediately. It was a race card issue as far as he was concerned.
Mm-hmm.
I consider it race baiting. He was using it as a way to bully the cop.
Mm-hmm.
I think the cop decided that he was going to tolerate it for a certain amount of time, and then, you know, when Gates followed him out of the house and didn't back off, I think that's where the cop said, done, we're finished.
Yep.
And went on from there.
Yep.
So, you know, I don't have any sympathy for Gates at this point, and I'm going to only say one thing about Barack Obama. Okay? Mm-hmm. Apparently, having Joe Biden as your vice president has exposed you to hoof and mouth disease.
Mm-hmm.
I think you need to get it treated as soon as possible.
Yes.
Because it's only going to get worse the longer you're exposed.
That's exactly right. But that does bring up another issue. And that issue for me is, if you are in a position of authority and you do not have the facts of the case, why would you open your mouth about it? Why would you opine about that without having the facts of the case? Doesn't make sense to me. And that goes to judgment issues. You know what? I have friends who have broken the law. And when we have talked about it, I have said, you know what? You really are a stupid SOB. What in the world did you think you were doing? And I certainly didn't call any press conferences and call the officers stupid.
Okay. Like I said, hoof and mouth disease.
Exactly.
Open mouth, insert foot, chew vigorously, spit out crud, insert other foot.
Yeah, exactly.
this idea that he's going to invite them both over to the White House to resolve this. Oh, please.
Well, apparently that's a done deal. I mean, that's in the works. Gonna happen.
Okay. Yeah, like Gates is going to back off an inch.
Well, and somebody needs to be talking to Crowley and saying, what are you thinking, guy? I mean, that is an absolute no-win situation for you.
Right. There's no, I can see no benefit to him whatsoever.
None.
In doing so. It's just, a no-win situation as far as he's concerned. Done with Obama and Gates. It's a minor issue.
Yeah.
It'll come back and haunt Obama on more than one occasion in the future, I believe. But,
and already has. I mean, I think it set his timetable back on the health care issue.
It certainly took his eye off the ball.
Well, not only that, but it certainly distracted the press.
Yeah, absolutely did that.
Yep.
All right. Now.
Okay.
In answer to your question, who did Tubular Bells?
Yes.
The musician is called Mike Oldfield. Just as it sounds, Oldfield. It was released in 1973.
Oh my gosh.
It's been around for quite a while. The album may or may not be still out there. That's enough.
Okay.
Go find him. You can find out what's going on from there.
Yep, probably can.
We have only, believe it or not, how did we do this?
I don't know.
We have 7 minutes left, and this is not enough time.
Not
enough time. Let's talk about Palin out, Palin in.
Oh, yeah.
Palin's out as governor of Alaska. Palin's into the lower 48.
Yep.
And we shall see.
I
did not listen to her speech, her goodbye.
Nope, I didn't either.
Only because, I didn't expect there to be any big, huge announcements in there. Apparently there were not, so. Who said it? There was a quote. Don't try to murder somebody trying to commit suicide. Why is the mainstream press even bothering with Palin? And my response was, who's killing who?
Yeah, really.
the left wants to, say all kinds of bad things about Palin, and lots of people on the right are wanting them to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But basically, if everybody's really smart at this point, they'll just ignore her. Which, frankly, from people like me,
mm-hmm.
I think would be great. Because out of mind, out of sight, out of mind, she can do a lot of damage to them if they're not paying any attention.
Yeah, exactly.
And frankly, I want them to be not paying attention.
Yes.
The people that should be paying attention are going to be the local people with the local candidates. Those are the people that we're interested in getting going and having a good thing going, so yep. Palin can work. I'm all for both the people on the right and the left, as far as the media is concerned, to just say Palin is a dead issue, walk away, forget her, not worry about her, and let her do her thing.
I agree with that. It was a little surprising to me that some of the blogs that I read, John Hopkins, some of the others, were basically tearing her down, saying that she had no future in the GOP, that she was a quitter and worthless, and that her effect on the populace and on the electorate would be negative for the GOP. And I found that astounding.
Well, you know, it's certainly not reality as I understand it.
Me either.
If
I were running for a local office, I would give up half of my campaign staff just to have her show up once for me in a district.
Oh, yeah.
Just
in a frickin' heartbeat.
That's exactly right.
I know. CJ, you're moving.
Yeah.
I probably wouldn't give up CJ.
Nah, probably not.
Victoria, you're moving.
Yeah, right. How about the dogs? I don't know.
dogs aren't worth it.
Yeah, I know. I mean, she is going to be phenomenal. And I absolutely agree with you. The best thing that can happen right now is for the right, left, and the media to ignore her. Because she will go in and she will just absolutely decapitate the opposition in those districts that she chooses to make an appearance in.
The only place I want her to be careful about, and I know you and I disagree a little bit on this particular point, is she needs to stay away from the Huckabee people.
Yeah. Yep. No, I agree with you.
I do
not have any great fondness for Governor Huckabee.
You know, she needs to stay, if she can stay out of the, I hate to say this, please, go ahead, give it to me. she needs to stay out of the churches.
Yep.
Keep it political, and I think it's going to be a really, really good thing.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely.
All right.
You betcha. Right.
Now, we have 2 minutes left,
cool.
And we have been terribly negligent.
We probably
terribly have. Negligent.
Have we not cross-marketed?
We have not cross-marketed.
Oh,
and,
God.
Frankly, I think that's bad, Tracy, bad bill.
Yep. Yep.
The American Conservative Party is something that you and I are big, big fans of, and we should be talking about it each and every week, and we have just let that slip and slide a little bit, and I'm afraid that, we need to get ourselves back on track here.
Yes, we do. So, everybody, grab your pencils. Grab your pencils and a writing implement and a piece of paper. Doesn't matter what the piece of paper is, your traffic ticket, whatever it is, but be ready to write it down. You ready?
The AmericanConservatives.org. Okay?
Yep.
That's the website for the American Conservative Party. Get on, get registered, get involved. We've got lots of Tea Party stuff going on.
Oh, yeah.
Lots of things that are going on in the States. Butch was on,
last
week ago talking about what's going on. There's lots of things going on in the States. Get registered. Be there.
And
30 seconds, Bill.
If you're from California, get on there and then respond to my email. When I email you and say, welcome, what is it that you want to do? So, having said that, thank you to all of my CT buddies. Thank you, Just Me Pammy and Arkansas Traveler. Know that you are listening, so I want to thank you.
All right. And thanks to Dave from Montreal. Appreciated being there.
Yeah.
Bill, you have a good week.
You too, Tracy.
We'll talk next week. Weekly Conservative Talk.
All right.
Good evening. Good night. Goodbye. We're done.
We're done. Cool. All right. Man, that went by way faster.
Yeah.
My goodness.
Lots of stuff to talk about. Lots of stuff to talk about.
Oh, man. We aren't going to run out of stuff to talk about.
Yeah. All right. Now, I saw three movies over the last 5 days.
Really?
Hey, I didn't have any work, you know.
Oh, well, that's true. So, I forgot that. Okay.
We went, CJ and I went and saw Harry Potter Friday night.
Ooh, how'd you like that?
I liked it. Enjoyed
all
it.
Right. Yeah.
I don't think it was as good as some of the other ones, but it was perfectly fine. CJ liked it.
Good.
Said basically the same thing. Wasn't as good as some of the other ones, but she liked it.
Mm-hmm.
And then played golf, and then we went and saw Transformers.
Ah, okay.
CJ said that I was laughing at things nobody else was.
Is that right?
And I said, really? Is there any examples you can think of? She goes, no, but there was places where everybody was laughing, but then there was some times when you were laughing, nobody else was laughing. I said, well, there was a lot, you know, there's lots of things going on in those movies.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
Not necessarily right where the camera's focused. There's lots of other things going on.
Yeah, right. Peripherally, yeah.
Yeah, that if you're paying attention, they're there. And sometimes it's just a phrase or a sentence that's used in a way that, you know, is intended to pique, you know, a particular portion of the audience.
Mm-hmm,
Most people will glance by it because it's not, you know, they don't understand the cultural
really
literacy.
Aimed at them, and yeah, okay.
Yeah, so they won't notice it, but other people will certainly do it. You know, and there was certainly places where little stuff like that was going on in the background and all
mm-hmm.
over the place.
Uh-huh.
You know, that it was really, really enjoyable. I thoroughly enjoyed it.
Right.
I liked the first one. The second one was just as good, in some ways better. The movie was long, and it was over really fast.
Wow.
You know.
Sucked you right in.
It was 150 minutes, and with the exception of maybe the first 7 minutes, that damn thing ran, you know, the characters were running, bouncing, getting blown up, shot at, or anything like that for most of the 150 minutes.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
So it was just constant stuff. I enjoyed it.
Yeah, cool.
And then last night, on pay-per-view, we bought Knowing.
Oh, I don't know
that
I knew.
I don't know if you saw this. This is a Nicolas Cage movie.
Ooh, I like Nicolas Cage.
He gets, and you don't know about it in the previews, he gets a hold of this piece of paper that's just full of numbers. Okay.
Hmm.
And having looked at this number, he realizes that what it is on this piece of paper is a date and a number. And the date, the number, is the number of people that die in a major event that day.
Oh, my gosh.
The paper was written by a 10-year-old girl in 1959.
Oh, and this is a modern-day movie. I mean, this is, like, happening today or something.
Yeah, the paper goes into a elementary school's time capsule.
Oh.
And Nicolas Cage's son, all the kids in 1959 were supposed to do drawings. This little girl puts numbers on it. The paperwork is put into envelopes, which are put into the time capsule. When the time capsule is opened at the elementary school, each envelope is given to one of the kids to open and see what was drawn.
Uh-huh.
Well, Nicolas Cage's son gets the envelope with the numbers.
Uh-huh.
And he thinks it's just ridiculous, whatever it is. And then
right.
he sees something, and then he goes into it deeper, and then he realizes that their dates and numbers.
Hmm.
But there's other numbers there that he doesn't know what they are. But
okay.
The date and number is not, the first one he sees is 9/11/01/2996.
Oh my goodness.
9/11/2001/2996 deaths.
Huh.
So he looks at this, and the whole paper is full of these events except for the last three. The last three haven't happened yet.
Ah, okay.
Okay. And he doesn't know what the last three are, but he kind of gets involved, and the first two-thirds of the movie is the next two events. And he's, the next event is, the first event he was there and he got lucky, he got, didn't get one, wasn't one of the dead.
Mm-hmm.
The second one, he's sitting out on a road and doesn't know what's, he looks down and looks at the number and he puts the numbers into the GPS and it's right where he's at.
Oops.
And he's standing there trying to figure out what's going on, and there was an accident in the roadway. He gets out of his car. He walks a couple car lanes up to find out what's going on. Just then, a plane crashes across the highway, taking out the vehicle right behind him.
Ooh.
And he's there, and then he realizes he's there. Now, here's the interesting part. The last number is a date and EE.
And what?
E, E. The letters E, E.
Hmm.
He doesn't know what E, E stands for. But the date is one day away.
Oh, great.
Okay. Well, eventually what you find out in the movie, and I'm going to tell you this because, you know, I don't think you'll ever go see it.
Probably not.
E, E is everyone else.
Oh, Lord.
And his question is, why did I get this message if there's nothing I can do to stop it? Okay, well, in fact, there is nothing he can do to stop it. What the event is, and it's something that I'm aware of. Let's see how good you are in astrophysics.
Okay.
Okay. There are three ways that the human race could end as a result of something from space.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you name the three?
Hmm. Well, one is obviously a planet killer hitting a planet.
That's the most obvious one. Yep, absolutely correct.
And actually, there's two different scenarios on that one. One of them could be a comet, the other could be an asteroid, and there are
correct.
Differences.
Correct.
Okay. The second could be, and actually this has been treated a couple of times in science fiction, the furnace goes out. The sun just
the sun.
Quit. Yep, sun just quits emitting.
I
don't know if that's one of them, but I have seen that scenario.
Yeah, not like
natural phenomena kind of thing.
Okay, not likely given the nature of our sun. Okay.
Well, no, but it could supernova, or it could even nova. You know, but in any event, that's I'm assuming that given your comment, that wasn't one of them.
That's not the other two.
Okay. It is possible that you can be hit with an asteroid that carries a virus that humanity could not survive.
Don't have to go there, because that's just a variation on the asteroid killers.
Nah, the asteroid killer is a physical thing, and this one is a medical thing. But anyway, okay, don't have to go there.
These are two that they know exist. Okay. First one is a gamma burst.
Okay. Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
It doesn't have to be really close. It can be as many as 1,000 to 10,000 light years away.
Yep.
If it's just aimed right.
Yep.
We'll take it head on and we're all dead.
Yep. In fact, I've seen that scenario written about in, again, science fiction, coming from a black hole.
Right. And the reality is, we've seen those gamma bursts.
Yep.
They actually happen on a fairly recurring basis,
mm-hmm.
One or two a year. Most of them are not anywhere near being able to be a problem for us or in our general direction. They're enough in our general direction, but far enough away to be not a problem.
Right.
We're talking millions of light years away.
Yep.
So that is a possibility, but the odds are long. It's a known event that does occur and can kill us if we happen to be at the right place at the wrong time.
Yes.
Here's the other one. It gets a lot less play. It is something that I've been aware of for a fairly long time because, I'm a science fiction geek, and so all that stuff in there.
Right.
And this is a coronal mass ejection.
Oh, yes.
And there's lots of reasons and whys to do it. And our sun has done two of them in the last 15 years, in both cases well away from the Earth, and not significant enough to create huge concerns, but both of them that would have had a pretty serious impact on the world had they actually gone off in our direction.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what knowing is.
Oh, my gosh.
A coronal mass ejection and a big one, and it's coming our way, and they're able to predict it a couple days in advance.
Oh, boy.
But they kept it quiet until the day of, because there's nothing they could do.
Okay.
It was going to be big enough that it was simply going to turn the planet into a cinder. There was going to be no survival.
Yep.
There would be no atmosphere. There would be no oceans. There would be, a burnt-out rock left when it was done. The issue was there were aliens around to take off some of the kids.
Oh, boy.
And one of the kids happens to be Nicolas Cage's son.
Well, of course.
Of course. So, anyways, the thing that I was thinking about is that CJ had lots of questions. None of them are particularly relevant to the discussion, but she said, what do you do in that situation? I said, you die.
Yep.
I said, game over, all finished, pack the bags, don't bother running, nowhere
to
go.
You'll just die tired.
And in fact, in the end, what Nicolas Cage does is he goes back to his mother and father and sister at their house, and that's where he dies with them.
Mm-hmm.
So, CJ thought that it was a good movie, and that it was an okay ending. I found it rather depressing. In the sense that all of my science fiction point of views are that there is a future.
Yes.
I may not be part of it. It may not be particularly great. It could be pretty bleak and stuff like that. But there is a future. This movie, despite the fact that the kids are taken off and resettled, and there's not lots. We're talking about 50 or 60.
Okay.
Despite that fact, the reality is future ends.
Oh, and see, now that, I don't get that.
I did. I've been trying to figure out most of the day, despite the kids being taking off, why did I consider it that extreme?
Right.
Because there is a future. The humanity will continue.
Right.
And then I kind of realized because this is my home.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Here, this planet is my home.
Yes, it is.
So I thought that was kind of interesting.
Yes, it was.
Right. Anyway.
Actually, that's actually kind of interesting. I'm rereading the Honor Harrington series by Drake.
Ah!
Yeah. And I really like his writing.
David Weber.
I'm sorry, David Weber, yes. And I always get David Drake and David Weber confused in my mind. Anyway.
Drake is pretty damn good about military stuff, too.
Oh, yeah. I love his... God, what's that mercenary series? Anyway, doesn't matter.
The Upcountry series?
Oh, I read that. That's cool, but that wasn't the one that I'm thinking about. It's the I'm outside, or I'd go in and look at one of the titles and tell you.
Anyways, David Weber, Honor Harrington.
Yeah. Anyway, they deal briefly with that in that series, primarily when they're talking about the Eridani edict, and that nobody bombards planetary surfaces. No military does that, because they had that kind of a thing, and that's kind of wound up what happened. The whole planet was just uninhabitable. The other issue that they deal with is the same one that you brought up. This is home. And they talk about the Solarian League and the preeminent member of that, of course, is Old Earth. But Old Earth had to be rehabilitated after, I don't know, it was sometime in the 2000s that everything broke loose and there were all kinds of plagues and engineered soldiers and all that kind of stuff. But they talked about, it took them six centuries to clean the whole place up, but then it once again became the center of the Solarian League. And in a number of other science fiction ones, Green Hills of Earth, all kinds of them, that talk about that same feeling. Yeah, it's great to go out and explore. Yes, we can colonize other places, but there's really only one home.
Right.
Yep. And that's actually pretty profound.
Pretty fundamental, which is
kind
of interesting.
Yeah, it is. You know, and if there, in fact, is other intelligent life out there, they will feel the same way about their home planet.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. Let's look at something here. We had very few archive listeners last week.
Really?
Only seven.
Hmm.
So I found that one to be rather interesting.
Yeah.
We actually had more live callers. Well, now the archive number has jumped. It's up to 10. We had 31 before. More people have listened to that. Over the last couple of hours. Six live, which is more than we had last week.
Yeah.
So, that's fine. And Pammy sent a nice email. I don't know if you got it. Or not email.
Twitter.
Great show, hour flew by. Topics wide, varied, and relevant.
Ah, cool. Actually, USA Conservative sent one, too. I don't know if you saw that one. In regard to the F-22 thing, he said that Obama had signed Brett Favre and his arm would keep these skies protected until the F-35s came along.
I'm usually, despite the fact that I dream mostly really bad scenarios for the world,
mm-hmm.
Usually pretty upbeat about the results. Anyways, It was kind of interesting. It was really interesting. Nice weekend to see a bunch of movies, you know, relax.
Yep.
And, you know, going forward, business is, I said, by the end of tomorrow, we might be in a position where we've already hit our target for July.
Yeah.
I think that's just outstanding. And what we do on marketing is, what I used to do is I would log on to the local circuit court. And because the records are available online, anybody that's been foreclosed on, that lawsuit is available, we pull the information and then we send them a letter. The letter is not standard, you know, attorney fare.
Okay.
It has a little graphic on it of a couple with a baby sitting in front of, standing in front of a house. It's a wood cutting type card, drawing. And then there's, you know, there's no letterhead. It's then just a discussion at the bottom is contact information. You know, about what your options are given this situation. And what we might be able to do to help. Now, the letter, when we first started using it, had a 10% response rate.
Okay.
But for a direct mail piece, that's just spectacular.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
But other people over the years have gotten up to it, and although they only send, you know, a typical lawyer letters, our response rate has stayed pretty consistently in the 3 to 4% range, which is still fine.
Good. Yeah.
Yeah. Because about 60% of the people that call, I can get to come in the door, and then we sign about 60% of them.
Cool.
So, we get about, you know, 2%, you know, between 1.5% and 2%, we actually get as new clients.
Wow.
So if we send out 100, you know, we will pick up one or two new clients from that 100, at a minimum. You know, I would suggest, you know, it's probably closer to 2 or 3 in the end. And at, you know, a couple grand a piece, it more than pays for the work.
Oh, yeah.
However, I mean, for me to sit down and pull 100 names and address the envelopes, because we hand-address all of them.
Oh, really?
Wow. Yeah.
Okay.
Because people will open a hand-address envelope.
Yes. Yep.
And throw away something that looks like it's coming from a lawyer.
Exactly. Exactly.
So they'll open the hand address, so we get a better response rate because of that. So the envelopes have to be hand-addressed, hand-return addressed.
Right.
And then stuffed, stamped, and sent down the way. We don't use a postage meter.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Okay, so
all
you got
regular stamps.
So you got 40. You got $42 in postage per 100. Well, 44 now, I guess. Probably takes a day to do that, so whatever a day's wages are for the person that you have doing that. Minimal cost of paper and toner or ink, so what are you up to?
11 cents plus 44 cents for the stamp. 11 cents for the paper, the envelope, ink. 44 cents for the stamp, and 40 cents per envelope for labor.
Cool. Cool. Jeez.
I know. I know exactly what it costs and stuff like that.
Yep.
Time and otherwise, it costs us almost exactly $1.05.
Wow.
Costs us about a dollar, depending on the postage.
Sure.
Costs us about a dollar per one.
Yep.
So, 95 cents, I think, is our current cost, you know, at 40 cents per envelope. Stuff like that.
Yeah.
Anyways, so $1 usually nets us 1 to 2 clients. 2 clients, that's $6,000.
Yeah.
$1, $6,000. Really, really good ROI.
How, and how often can you do that? Is that like a once-a-month thing or once every 3 months?
Once a month.
Once a month. Okay.
And
you get 100 names?
Yeah, 100 names about once a month.
Wow.
But we haven't done a whole lot of marketing. So we got 44 out the first day that we had our assistant last Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
We got 44 out Wednesday in the afternoon.
Hmm.
And we got one new client out of that batch.
Wow.
The second batch went out on Friday.
Mm-hmm.
150 went out on Friday. We have two clients already, and two of the three coming in tomorrow are from the letters.
Wow.
So if we sign both of those, which are probable at this point,
mm-hmm.
We'll have four from that batch.
My God.
And my marketing person has another 160 envelopes ready.
Cool.
Because we haven't done any. I told her to go back to the beginning of June.
Mm-hmm.
So we have almost 2 months worth to do, and obviously foreclosures are doing pretty good. So we're going to have about 300 letters for 2 months.
Incidentally, I don't know if you've seen this yet or not, but the that foreclosure assistance money that was in the stimulus thing.
Yeah.
That was supposed to help like I don't know 3-4 million people, something like that.
Yeah.
200,000.
Not going very far.
Nope. It sure isn't. Man.
So, yeah, and of course the redefault rate for people that were in default is now 85%.
Yeah. Did you get that email that I sent you about the commercial RE thing? Or, I'm sorry, the alt A's and those with that graph? Yeah.
Yep.
That's scary as hell.
No, but we've been talking about it for a long time. Here's the other issue about the Alt-A, and I don't remember that it went into it. The option arms.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
It did go into those,
Wait a second.
And the repricing?
Here's the issue with the option arms, okay?
Mm-hmm.
Every time somebody, and nobody's talking about this, every time somebody submits a payment, okay,
mm-hmm.
that is for less than the interest, okay,
yep.
the bank registers the difference between the payment and the actual interest amount
as
income.
Principal. Oh, as income?
As income.
Oh, my God.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Oh, my God. Yeah. Because it's interest. It's being added to the mortgage, and yes, you would think it was just being added to their liability base and, you know, whatever.
Or their assets.
Uh-uh. Yeah. They're recording it as income.
Oh, Jesus.
So when these things finally start hitting and resetting,
mm-hmm.
and they fail, they're going to have to restate their income back.
Or they're going to have to hit their loan loss reserve.
Yeah, 115% mortgage. Let me tell you what's going to happen to that loss reserve.
Yeah, I know. I know what's going to happen to it.
Especially when you have to backdate all the earnings for the last 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
So that's one of those nice little goodies that we heard about a year ago and doesn't get very much play.
No, it doesn't. Well, because I think most folks who aren't either in your or my business don't understand it.
I can't imagine that the banks are that stupid, but I understand why they're doing it.
Well, I understand why they're doing it, but you're right. I mean, right now it would be massively inconvenient. A year, 2 years down the road, it's going to be massively catastrophic. I'll take inconvenient over catastrophic any day.
Anyway, we're not actually going to send out this next batch of letters until the weekend.
Oh, is that right? You're going to try and catch up a little bit first?
No, first of all, we want to kind of space it out a little bit.
Sure.
And it doesn't necessarily have an impact. because most cases, there's from the date of filing to the date where there's an issue, we've got 45 to 60 days.
Oh, okay. Yep.
Which is why we can go back to June 1st and still be picking up business out of it.
Yeah, sure. Exactly.
We got an email this morning or this afternoon just before the show, about an hour before the show, that the buyers finally sent their email to say, yeah, we're not interested.
Ah, okay. Okay,
so
fine.
Victoria said, what are you going to send back? I said, well, I've been sitting here thinking about it, and nothing I can send back other than thank you, goodbye, is anything more than a lot of snark. She goes, I'm interested in a lot of snark, so I'll do it.
Oh, Jesus. Are you kidding me?
I'm a little concerned by that. She can go over. She can go past snark pretty fast.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
oh God.
But, we're going to generate. I would suggest. We told her we wouldn't actually put down in paper, but we'd pretty much guarantee 5 clients in the first 30 days.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to have 8 in the first 10.
Mm.
So I know why Victoria wants to do the snark, and, and will we be able to maintain this pace? No, I'm not interested in maintaining this pace either.
Well, no.
We can't handle 8 cases a week.
Well, no, you can't, unless you hire some more.
No,
I understand. I'm just telling you.
Eight cases a week is, 8 cases a week is, nuts. That's
oh yeah. Well, but you aren't going to get 8 cases a week.
No.
I mean.
No, I'm happy with, 2 to 3 cases a week.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
2 cases a week is really good. 3 cases is great. So if we do 2, 3, 2, 3,
mm-hmm.
That puts us between 8 and 10 a month. That's right where we want to be.
Mm-hmm.
And that.
Given that, my writing back to them would consist more along the lines of, thank you so much for making us realize that we can actually do better this way than if we had sold it to you.
Yeah. The last thing she had in her thing, good luck in California, and I'm thinking, you don't even know what's going to hit.
No, you don't. And if you think you're going to come in and jump in and fill a void, that ain't happening.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Not going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be, other attorneys are going to go, what happened?
Mm-hmm.
We're back. We're strong.
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm very upbeat by it. And we've got phone calls from 2 people that we saw in the last month that did not retain us, who are coming in with money in the next 2 days.
Wow.
Retain us. So, I mean, I don't add that to that list of people we're getting now, but
mm-hmm.
it is, in
mm-hmm.
fact, new clients because we're just being retained.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. But
Are these the ones that got to you early and needed to think about it for a while?
Most people are not in that situation, but
right.
yeah, what happens is, it's not so much that they need to think about it,
mm-hmm.
is, our clients are bankrupt.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Coming up with $2,000 to actually file bankruptcy
is a difficult thing.
It's a process.
Yeah.
It right. can be done, and we have ways to help, guide you towards it.
Mm-hmm.
But we don't do it unless the money's there, and that means, most people have to sell something, go talk to parents,
right.
Do something to generate that cash. Usually they don't have it.
Right.
Exactly. For people that are facing foreclosure, those are actually easier people to do because, you know, they can usually make 70 or 80% of their mortgage. They're just having a problem with the balance. Well, 70 or 80% of the mortgage, you know, times two is our fee.
Got it.
And because of the way it's set up here, as far as judicial foreclosures are concerned, at waiting another 2 months doesn't, in most cases, cause any additional hardship.
Got it. Sure.
You know, so if somebody's mortgage payment is $1,500 a month, you know, they just, and they're already down 4 months, so what if they're going to be down five?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
You know, so for that, those generally are pretty easy to get the money out of. The Chapter 7s, the people that are, don't have a house and stuff like that, who are struggling, those are harder to come up with the cash. But, you know, what happens is over a 3 to 6 month period, about half of them will.
Wow.
And they'll come back, you know, and get things started.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I, that's worked into our calculations and stuff like that as far as work is concerned, not as far as business is concerned.
Sure. Right.
So, you know. You know, and that's what I tried to explain to, you know, to the potential buyers. Was,
right.
You know, you can't say somebody that came in and didn't retain you today is a lost cause.
Exactly.
I said, you know, because there's a certain percentage, about a third, that over time will eventually, you know, hire you.
Exactly.
And
it just takes them a while to round up the bucks.
Right. You know. Sometimes for those people, you know, things resolve, many issues tend to resolve. You know, something else happens. There's an old rule that I ran into, and I don't know if you ever learned this rule. When I was younger and things were going wrong, usually a solution would present itself. It wouldn't be an optimal solution. It would be kind of a dangerous solution. If I did it, it paid off, I was fine. If I didn't, I would probably be in worse condition, but realistically speaking, not tremendously worse position than I am now. And I, you know, I, of course, took those opportunities when I was younger, and often, more often than not, you know, they didn't pay off, and I ended up
Yeah, right.
But I also learned, I learned through most of my 20s that if I would just wait, and sometimes I had to wait to the last possible second. Usually another opportunity would present itself that was a lot more solid, would probably resolve the situation in 80 or 90% of the cases rather than 10 or 20% of the cases, and may not be the most optimum way to resolve it, but would, in fact, resolve it. In other words, it wouldn't be the perfect solution, but it would guarantee a solution. And so by the time I was in like 28, 29, 30, I started realizing then the harder something pushed me to resolve early, the more I held back against it. And usually what happens is right at the very end, you know, it happens. You know, whatever presents. And I'll give you an example. When we had this office early, 2001, 2002, we were just barely breaking even. We had an Isuzu Trooper. That was our only vehicle. And I blew the engine.
Oh, boy.
Well, I didn't blow the engine. The engine gave up the ghost.
Yeah.
And it happened on a Sunday morning. And by the time we got all things straightened out and realized there was a really, really big problem here, and, we sat down and we figured it out, and I go, you know, here's the deal. We need $5,000 to walk in the door this week. Now, we hadn't had a $5,000 month yet. Okay? So to suggest that we needed a $5,000 week was like, you know, saying, okay.
What are you thinking of? Right.
Okay. We didn't get $5,000 that week, but we did get $4,200. And 4,200 was enough. It wasn't perfect, but it was enough. And it was another example of, you know, we probably could have done all kinds of things Sunday night or even Monday. You know, we could have gone to friends, we could have gone to my parents, we could have gone to somebody to borrow money. You know, anything other than count on, you know, business to generate enough money to actually get us through.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but that's what we did. We decided not to borrow, not to ask for any money, just to see what we could do and do the best we could. It is a natural tendency now for me to, when something bad happens,
mm-hmm.
wait.
Mm-hmm.
A more optimum solution will probably present itself. It may not come until the very last second.
Mm-hmm.
But over the last 7 years in this office,
yeah,
it's probably happened 5 times where we were on Sunday night in a position where the phones would be turned off by Tuesday if money doesn't come in the door,
mm-hmm.
and we have no clients scheduled, nobody coming in, nobody planning on coming in, no appointments. You know, we're Sunday night, we don't have any reason to believe money is coming in on Monday and we're in trouble on Tuesday and people call on Monday and show up with money.
Wow.
That's it. It's at least 5 times it's happened.
Wow.
And you just got to simply sit there. And, of course, you know, lots of people say, well, God is looking out for you.
Yeah.
And I sit there and say, you know, he can go ahead and keep looking out for me, but in the same token, I'm going to keep working my ass off to try and make sure it can happen.
Oh, yeah. Yep.
The old one that's drowning and somebody threw him a life raft and goes, no, God's going to take care of me.
Yeah, exactly.
Then the boat comes and he goes, no, God's going to take care of me.
Yeah, right.
He drowns and goes, why didn't you take care of me? I sent you a life preserver. I sent you a raft. What did you want? You know?
Exactly.
You know.
I love that story, by the way. That's a great story.
Yeah, you know, and that's my point is, you know, thank you, God's looking out for me, but that doesn't mean that I ain't got to work my ass off to make it work.
That's exactly right. That is exactly right.
So, you know, and of course, at that point, it really doesn't make any difference whether God's looking out for me or not.
Exactly. Yep.
I'm just going to be working my ass off.
I agree.
So, and yeah, you're right. This is, you know, thank you for reminding us that this practice actually is a gold mine, and all we have to do is, you know, work.
Yep, exactly. That is so cool. I love that.
I'd like us to be in the position. 8 to 10 cases a month. Our average fee is $2,200.
Wow.
That gives you an idea. That's our average fee based on the mix of clients we get.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Wow.
8 to 10. That's, you know.
That is
15,
so cool.
$20,000 a month.
Yeah. Nobody ought to be turning their nose up on that one.
Well, you got to understand, you know, that's why we've averaged over the last year,
mm-hmm. 2.6
cases per month.
Wow.
You know, with practically no effort.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know,
no, I mean, that's what I'm wowing about.
Yeah, 2.6 cases per month with virtually no effort. You know, any effort would kick it up to 4. You know, at our rate, that's a pretty good living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and, you know, somebody that's willing to actually, you know, show up and work 20 hours a week in the office, you know, and actually do the marketing, you
mm-hmm.
know, we figured six or seven cases a month was an easy number. So, no, they just didn't buy it.
Well,
I have, you know, and that's kind of what I, you know, the snark that I wanted to do was, you know, I wanted to send them a copy of our Schedule C come next year.
Yeah.
You know, they know where we are right now for the first 6 months.
Yep.
You know, and then to turn over a Schedule C with $100,000 on it
mm-hmm.
means that almost all that was made in the last 5 months.
Exactly.
You know.
Yeah.
Which probably means, you know, this is the only thing that bothers me, okay? We've been able to, you know, not have to worry about paying very much in taxes because the income has been just right where we need it to be.
Mm-hmm.
With not a whole lot of extra in there. You know, and that's kind of where we've been aiming for it. You know,
mm-hmm.
If we actually do as well as we think over the next 5 to 6 months, we're actually going to pay a lot in taxes.
Yeah, you are.
is actually going to be a pretty big tax bill. So.
Yep.
Such is the problem.
Just think of all those poor people you're going to be helping get health care there.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's what you were thinking of, I can tell.
Yeah. I broke another tooth over the weekend.
Oh, no.
Oh, don't worry about my mouth. I have four teeth in my mouth that are not in other way, shape, or form. Both broken, cracked, half of pieces.
Yeah.
Victoria's mouth's not a whole lot better.
Mm. Damn.
Healthcare is more important than dental care.
Well, that's true. It is.
Anyways, all right.
Yep. Okay, kiddo.
Let's get this thing on the map.
I'm ready.
And man, I've got work. We've got four clients coming in the morning, and I got six petitions to do, and I got a person in training. So
yep.
We'll talk.
All righty. Have a good
nice
one.
Job. Thanks, Bill.
You too. Bye.